Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. BlockFi, which is a business that was created in 2017 and was set to revolutionise the world of crypto by offering lots of different financial products to investors, has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. And this is a business that in July 2021 raised money at a valuation of $4.5 billion and over the course of the last couple of years raised a total of more than $1 billion from investors. So what is going on in the world of crypto? Why are all these massive companies that have valuations in the billions suddenly becoming worthless overnight? So in today's episode, I want to investigate exactly what's going on. We'll talk about all of the big failures that have happened over the course of the last 6 months or so. I'll talk about the domino effect because there is a lot of trade that's going on between these large crypto businesses. And when one goes down, it's taking other businesses with it. It's causing contagion, it's causing a lack of liquidity, and it's causing a crisis. And people are now getting very nervous. We'll talk about the concept of crypto lending because that's where BlockFi got itself into trouble. And BlockFi isn't the first company that's gone down as a result of crypto lending. The two highest profile companies this year are Voyager Digital and Celsius. So we'll have a look at what happened with those companies. And we'll go through the fundamental concept of crypto lending and why I think it's inherently risky and how it could really cause a major problem for the rest of the sector. I'll then go on to talk about sex because that always lightens the mood. And when I say sex, I mean CEX, relating to centralized exchanges versus decentralized exchanges. So I'll have a look at the difference between sex and DEX. And I'll talk about whether or not the current failures in the market are pushing people towards one or the other. And as we're talking about sex, I'll then touch briefly on investor protection, whether or not there is any protection in the crypto world. And then finally today, I'll finish up with my summary. So what I think is likely to happen in the crypto markets over the course of the next 3 months, and what the impact of this will be on the general economy. So normally this would be the point in the video where I'd ask for a thumbs up and to support the channel. I'm not going to do that today. I just wanted to talk about the statues that I normally have on the cabinet behind me here. I haven't had time to put one up today, so apologies for that. This is the first video I haven't managed to put one up for. I will definitely make sure that there's one in place next time. So as I mentioned at the start of the video, BlockFi has now filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. And one of the main faults with the business is in its lending arm, the crypto lending business. And I wanted to go through crypto lending as a concept to make sure everybody's aware of what's happening, what the market looks like, and why crypto lending exists. Well, cryptocurrencies, by definition, are currency. So this is exactly the same concept as US dollars, euros, pesos, you name it, it's the same idea. And whenever you have a currency, you have people who have large amounts of currency, so they're building up large wealth, and you have people who want to borrow currency because they want to do things with amounts of money that they don't actually have. So it's exactly the same idea as the high street banks. If you want to go and buy a house, you might not have enough money to actually make that purchase, but you're earning enough money that you'll be able to pay back a loan over the next 20 or 30 years. So a bank will give you a large advance, a loan, in order to buy that house. And the same idea applies to the crypto markets. If you want to do something with Bitcoin or Ethereum or some other form of crypto, but you don't have enough to be able to do it, you can go and borrow it from people like BlockFi. So where did BlockFi get that money from? Well, they get it from investors. So people who've got large amounts of Bitcoin or Ethereum and they want to earn some interest on it. So rather than just leaving it in a cold wallet and hoping that it will increase in value, you can actually earn a yield off that currency by putting it on a platform like BlockFi and allowing BlockFi to use that cryptocurrency to lend to somebody else. So it's a perfect relationship. You get paid your interest, so you might get paid 5 or 10% return on your Bitcoin deposit. BlockFi lends that Bitcoin to an institution who wants to do something with it, and that institution will pay maybe 15 or 20% interest. And BlockFi makes a profit by keeping the difference between how much it's charging the borrower and how much it's paying the people who've got the money on deposit. So the idea of crypto lending is exactly the same as standard banking. So you would think that this should be as safe as houses. But the fundamental issue here is it isn't as safe as houses because there aren't any houses involved. If we go back to that example we just talked about you borrowing money to buy a house, when the bank gives you that money, It takes a charge over the property that you buy. So if you default on the loan, if you can no longer afford to pay that loan, the bank will enforce, it will then take ownership of that property, and then it will sell it in the market to pay back the loan. And as long as it hasn't lent more than the value of the property, it will be repaid in full. So that's why banks love secured lending. They love something that has an asset behind it, because if you fail to repay, it can seize that asset, sell it, and take the money for itself. But the problem with cryptocurrency is there aren't any assets sitting behind any of these loans. So if you're an institution that wants to borrow $100 billion of Bitcoin, you may be doing that because you believe that the price of Bitcoin is going to go up. So you can sit on that $100 million, wait for Bitcoin to go up by 10%, and you've made $10 million worth of profit. But the problem that you have is if the price of Bitcoin falls by 10%, then you're now sitting in a loss. You've borrowed $100 million, but your asset is now worth only $90 million. So you've got a $10 million loss. And from the lender's point of view, that's obviously bad news, because they need you to pay back $100 million at the end of the loan. And if you've only got assets worth $90 million, then you're going to need to find $10 million from somewhere else. So that's part of the problem with the crypto lending market, is that most of the loans were not secured. So they were just lent on a speculative basis. Now, in terms of how that's actually managed, companies like BlockFi will ask the borrowers to put money on deposit on what's called a margin call. So in the example we've just talked about, where somebody borrows $100 million worth of Bitcoin, they may decide that Bitcoin's unlikely to move by more than 10%. So if 10% is the margin, they would ask that institution to deposit $10 million just to cover the risk of Bitcoin falling by 10%. Now, if Bitcoin actually falls by 20%, then BlockFi would call the borrower and say, actually, Bitcoin is now looking more risky. We need you to deposit another $10 million because the initial $10 million that we're holding isn't enough to cover the movement in the market. So that's generally how margin calls work. You take a view as to how much you think the market could move, and then you take that amount on deposit to cover your risk. Now, you may already have guessed the punchline to this story, but if you haven't, I'm going to tell you what it is. The crypto markets have fallen by around 70% since November 2021. So over the last 12 months, we have seen an enormous crash in cryptocurrency prices. And none of the lenders factored this into their equations. So when they were making all of their loans over the last 12 months or so, they never expected prices to move to this extreme. So they didn't have enough cash on margin to cover a 70% fall. So that's why a lot of these lenders are now finding themselves in extreme difficulty, because they've lent large amounts of money to institutions. The value of the cryptocurrency that those institutions has borrowed has fallen by up to 70%. So they're sitting in a massive loss. They just don't have enough cryptocurrency to pay back those loans. And the lenders are now sitting fully exposed, and many of them are now insolvent. And this does raise the fundamental question as to whether or not crypto lending is a viable business, because it's very different to traditional lending. Firstly, with a lot of traditional lending, such as mortgages, you have assets behind those loans, so you've got something to fall back on in a worst case scenario. But secondly, with traditional banking, a lot of the lending is made against cash flow. So if it's lending to individuals, it's against their salaries, which you can check how long they've been paid that salary, what the likelihood is of that person losing their job, all of that sort of analysis. Or if it's to a company, you can look at their cash flows, their profitability, their credit rating, and take a view as to whether or not you think that company is good to repay that money. So there's some analysis and there's some cash flow behind it. In the crypto markets, a lot of the lending is for speculative purposes. So institutions are borrowing large amounts because they think something good is going to happen with that particular currency. And unfortunately, over the last 12 months, bad things have been happening with most of the currencies. So all of these loans are now starting to become bad from the lender's point of view. And it's very, very difficult to be able to recover the situation, because the institutions who have borrowed are crypto companies and the crypto markets are in dire straits. So there's no real way out. There's no alternative way of being able to repay these loans. So there is a massive question mark right now as to whether or not any of these crypto lending businesses actually have a viable business model. Now, before we go on to talk about BlockFi, I wanted to talk about a few other crypto businesses that have gone into Chapter 11 bankruptcy or failed over the course of the last 6 months. Celsius was one of the largest crypto lenders, which at its peak had 1.7 million registered customers, and at its peak had assets under management of $11.8 billion. Now, Celsius was taking a very aggressive approach to the market, and at one stage was offering loans to investors priced at 0.1% interest, and at the same time was offering deposit interest rates to depositors of up to 18%. So when you do the maths on that, that's an impossible equation, because how can you pay 18% to people who are giving you the money and then only charge 0.1% on the loans that you're giving out to investors and make any sort of profit? You're guaranteed to make almost an 18% loss on that transaction. And the reason for that at the time was that a lot of the markets were going up. So because all the cryptocurrencies were increasing in value, Celsius must have believed that it could make a speculative profit. But unfortunately, it made a spectacular loss. And this is a company that raised $750 million in November 2021 at a valuation of $3.5 billion. And at that stage, the chief executive stated that in 12 months' time, he was expecting the value of the business to be between $7 billion and $10 billion. But unfortunately, the company never survived for another 12 months and went into Chapter 11 bankruptcy on the 13th of July. Now, one of the reasons that it was reported that Celsius had a liquidity crisis and ran out of cash was because a venture capital fund called Three Arrows Capital, which was investing in cryptocurrencies, went into Chapter 11 bankruptcy on the 1st of July and had a contagion knock-on effect, because Three Arrows Capital had been borrowing large amounts from all of the crypto lenders on a speculative basis. And then as the price of all of the cryptocurrencies fell, it started booking bigger and bigger losses on all of those borrowings and eventually had to declare itself bankrupt after the Terra Luna coin collapsed in value. And you'll know this if you've been following the channel. I talked about this in a recent video. Terra Luna was a stable coin that was meant to have a fixed value. But unfortunately, because the fixed price was actually linked to another coin which had a floating value, which the market started shorting and so reduced the value significantly, the price of Terra Luna collapsed and it went from a market capitalization of $40 billion to zero in a very short space of time. And this obviously caused major problems for any investors that had put a lot of money into Terra Luna, and one of those was Three Arrows Capital, so that's one of the reasons that it went bankrupt. And another business that got caught up in this contagion was Voyager Digital. And Voyager Digital was another crypto lender which had been growing aggressively and had actually increased its loan book from $380 million in March 21 to over $2 billion in March 22. And the biggest single loan that it had on its books was $650 million directly to Three Arrows Capital. So when Three Arrows Capital filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy, that meant that it wasn't going to repay that $650 million to Voyager. And as a direct result, Voyager Digital was forced to file for Chapter 11 bankruptcy itself on the 6th of July. Now, interestingly, as part of the Voyager Digital bankruptcy proceeding, there was an auction held for all of the remaining assets. And the winner of that auction was FTX. And they agreed to pay around $1.1 billion for all of those assets. Now, that deal has obviously failed to complete as a direct result of FTX filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. And I'm sure you've been following the channel, but FTX had a market valuation of $32 billion in January 2022. Is now in Chapter 11 bankruptcy and is obviously worth very, very little. And the list of crypto lenders and other crypto businesses that are now in difficulty does go on, but I don't have time to cover them all in this video. But they include companies such as Genesis, Babel, and Vold, who've either suspended all of their customer withdrawals or severely restricted them due to a lack of liquidity. BlockFi, which was established in 2017 by its founders Flory Marquez and Zach Prince. And this is a guy who claims to have paid his way through university by being a semi-professional online poker player. BlockFi was pitched to the market as an all-encompassing financial services business for cryptocurrencies. So it was looking to offer loans and credit cards and all of the different aspects that you would find in a traditional bank. After a number of smaller seed rounds, the company raised $50 million in August 2020 from a variety of cryptocurrency investors. And in March 2021, raised $350 million at a valuation of $3 billion from a variety of investors, including Tiger Global Management, Valor Ventures, Bain Capital, and Paradigm. As crypto prices started to take off and excitement about the future value of BlockFi reached fever pitch, the company raised a further $500 million in July 2021, so an increase of $1.5 billion in around 120 days. And the investors in that round were Tiger Global Management, Coinbase Ventures, and an outfit called Hedo Sophia. But unfortunately for BlockFi, the fall in crypto prices that we've seen since November 21 had a devastating impact on both the company and its valuation. And in June 2022, it agreed a deal with FTX to provide a revolving credit facility of $400 million, which it needed an immediate injection of $250 million from. So as you can see, over the last couple of years, BlockFi has raised over $1 billion and at its peak had a valuation of $4.5 billion. As a result of falling prices in the crypto markets and the ongoing contagion caused by the FTX failure, BlockFi filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy on Monday the 28th of November. BlockFi said the liquidity crisis was due to its exposure to FTX via loans to Alameda, which is the crypto hedge fund associated with FTX, as well as cryptocurrencies held on FTX's platform that became trapped. In a court filing, BlockFi listed FTX as its second largest creditor, with $275 million owed on a loan extended earlier this year. It also said that it owes money to more than 100,000 creditors and that it plans to lay off two-thirds of its 292 employees. BlockFi's largest creditor is Ankara Trust, which represents creditors in stress situations and is owed $729 million. The company also lists the US Securities and Exchange Commission as one of its largest creditors with a $30 million claim, which relates to a $100 million settlement that BlockFi agreed in relation to a retail crypto lending product the company offered to nearly 600,000 investors. BlockFi said its Chapter 11 case will enable the company to stabilize its business and maximize value for all stakeholders. Acting in the best interest of our clients is our top priority and continues to guide our path forward. So as I said, I want to talk about CEX, which is C-E-X, which is the abbreviation for centralized exchanges. And centralized exchanges are basically trading platforms. So FTX is a great example. So is Binance and a lot of other different places where you can go and buy and sell cryptocurrency in a relatively user-friendly fashion. So you have to join, you have to go through all of their approval system, and then you have to actually transfer some of your real money into crypto money before you can buy anything. But once you've done that, you can happily trade freely by logging on and just picking what coins that you'd like to buy, press buy or sell, and it's pretty straightforward. So these centralized exchanges are very similar to what you might use for trading stocks and shares. If you have an app or you use your computer and you go on and you want to buy shares in Apple or Google, it's relatively straightforward to do that. And this is exactly the same situation, but it's in the world of cryptocurrency. And most of these central exchanges offer a digital wallet. So you can leave all of the coins that you've bought, all the different cryptocurrencies, in your digital wallet on that centralized exchange. And that's exactly what FTX was doing. If you had an account with FTX, you could just leave all of your holdings of Bitcoin and Ethereum and whatever else you'd been buying in your account. And when you log back on, you can check what the value is, whether it's gone up or down. You can sell it. So it's pretty easy to use. But the problem that you have by doing that is that you're running the risk of that company going bust. And that's exactly what's happened with FTX. And it's estimated now that over 1 million people have got their investments tied up on the FTX platform. And obviously, they're now at risk of losing all of that money. Now, centralized exchanges are obviously convenient and easy to use. But actually, when you look at the way cryptocurrency was created, it was done to avoid the use of any intermediaries whatsoever. So you can do a direct transaction with another person. You can buy and sell Bitcoin or any other type of crypto directly without having to use any third parties at all. And that's what's called a decentralized exchange. So DEX, DEX. And since the news of FTX's bankruptcy was announced, there has been a big shift in the market towards using DEX rather than CEX. This graph shows the monthly trading volumes on both centralized exchanges and decentralized exchanges since January 2020. The centralized exchange volumes are shown in red and the decentralized exchange volumes in black. And you can see that in the period between January 2020 and July 2021, the volumes traded on both types of exchanges moved broadly in parallel, with centralized exchanges being more popular and therefore generating more volumes. However, in the period between July 21 and May 22, which was when the crypto markets were doing very well and prices were strong, there was a big increase in the use of centralized exchanges. And this reflects the fact that there were a lot more people looking to buy cryptocurrencies, so more investors came into the market, and the easiest way to be able to buy cryptocurrency is through a centralized exchange such as FTX. And obviously these cryptocurrency exchanges were advertising heavily to investors. If you saw the recent video that I posted about the FTX adverts, they had celebrities such as Tom Brady, Steph Curry, and Larry David who were making adverts. And FTX actually posted an advert during the halftime break of the 2022 Super Bowl, which is the premium slot for any company wanting to advertise anywhere in the world. But if you look at what's happened since July 2022, there has been a complete switch in terms of the volumes being traded, and decentralized exchanges are now significantly more popular than centralized exchanges. And this is really for two reasons. Firstly, the risk factor of dealing with a centralized exchange such as FTX, which has been exposed entirely through this bankruptcy. If you had any holdings with them at the time that the company went into Chapter 11, they are now frozen, and there is a big risk that you will never see that cash again. So investors are now looking to avoid that risk by dealing directly. And secondly, because the market has tanked and the values have fallen significantly, a lot of casual investors who entered the market when things were going very well and prices were going up and up and up have decided to exit. And they are not the sort of investors who are using decentralized exchanges because it is quite a lot more complicated. And this graph obviously represents bad news for all of those centralized exchanges that are still in business, because it means the volume of business that they're seeing is falling on a monthly basis. And that will obviously be bad news for both their profits and, more importantly, their cash flows. So as I said at the start of the video, if we're talking about sex, I'd like to talk about protection. And unfortunately, in the world of crypto, there is very little in the way of protection. And I wanted to go through the ins and outs of this and how it compares to traditional banking. So in most countries around the world, banking is a regulated entity. And there are rules in place that provide investors and depositors with some form of protection. So if I take the US, for example, if you place your money into a bank that's covered by the Federal Deposit Security Corporation, then you'll have protection up to $250,000. So in the event that that institution goes bust, becomes bankrupt, and you've got all your life savings in there, you will get back that first $250,000. So you know whatever happens, that money is rock solid safe. And the same principle applies in the US if you're dealing in stocks and bonds. You will be protected up to a maximum of $500,000. And the reason that these protections are in place is that firstly, there are regulations in place. And secondly, the institutions involved have to have minimum capital that they set aside to cover the risk of some form of liquidity crisis. So there are mechanisms in place that are designed to try to prevent these institutions becoming worthless. And if they do become worthless, there is insurance in place to make sure you get your money back. Now, unfortunately, the world of cryptocurrency currently has very little in the way of regulations or insurance. So if you put your money on deposit with a centralized exchange such as FTX, there is absolutely no guarantee that you will ever see that money again. Now, you may have heard of a company called CoinCover, which does actually provide some form of protection, but that protection is predominantly focused on hacking, somebody breaking into your account and stealing your Bitcoin out of your wallet. In the event that that happens, and as long as the exchange that you're dealing with meets all of the requirements for CoinCover, then you can recover that Bitcoin. But if the exchange itself goes bust, then you've got absolutely nothing to rely upon. And I think this is one of the key differences between mainstream banking and cryptocurrency, is that there is a higher degree of risk. And I think that's one of the reasons that's preventing mainstream investors from moving into cryptocurrency, because it's much higher risk. And as we just discussed, the centralized exchanges, which is where most of the mainstream investors would go to because it's much easier to do the dealings, that's the place where you've got absolutely no cover whatsoever. On a decentralized dealing basis, at least you can protect yourself by putting it into cold wallets, which are much more difficult for somebody to break into. And also, there's no risk of the platform going bust and you losing your cryptocurrency. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I wanted to post this update because we've talked about BlockFi previously in other videos, and it's been teetering on the brink of Chapter 11 bankruptcy for a number of months. And the company has now given up the ghost and filed for bankruptcy. And this was predominantly brought on by the failure of FTX, because FTX had come in earlier this year and bailed BlockFi out. It had provided this $400 million revolving credit facility. And just to talk that through, a revolving credit facility is basically like an overdraft that you would have on your checking account, because you can draw the money down and then pay it back and then draw the money down and pay it back. So it's not like a traditional loan that you'd get to buy a house where you pay it back over a number of years on an equal installments basis. This is something that you can dip into and dip out of. So that's why it's called a revolving credit facility. The money goes round and round between you and the lender. And at the time that FTX provided that facility, it also agreed a deal to buy BlockFi for up to $240 million. And this was because Sam Bankman-Fried was very acquisitive. He wanted to buy as many companies as he could to try to grow his empire. So he had his eyes on BlockFi and he bailed them out and he wanted to take it over. But unfortunately, because FTX was insolvent itself, obviously, that relationship has now fallen through. BlockFi no longer has any access to that revolving credit facility. There is no cash. There is no revolving credit facility. It's gone. And that's really been the final straw for BlockFi. But if we take a step back and talk about what we were looking at earlier in this video, the concept of cryptocurrency lending, it is a very high-risk business. The way a lot of these lenders have been structured, it's all been on a speculative basis. So that works really well when the market's going up. And that's what happened during 2021, when all these companies were raising hundreds of millions of dollars at eye-watering valuations in the billions. Because if crypto's going up and up and you're lending it to people, it's very easy for them to give you it back because they've just made a 10 or 20% profit on that crypto. So they can give you back what they borrowed and keep the balance for themselves. But when the reverse happens, when you see prices falling, obviously the people who borrowed that money are underwater. The value of the currency that they're holding is less than it was when they took out the loan. And as the price continues to go down on a mark-to-market basis, they are making massive losses. And that's what's happened over the course of the last 12 months. So that's caused major problems for everybody that's borrowing cryptocurrency. And that's caused even bigger problems for companies like BlockFi, Celsius, and Voyager Digital. And in addition to that, we've also had the direct contagion of companies like Three Arrows Capital going bust because they took out massive loans from all of these platforms. And of course, once you're in Chapter 11, you're never going to repay those loans. So we've seen a real domino effect. As one company goes down, it's causing other companies to have liquidity crises. It's causing them to be unable to pay other people. And so we're seeing the contagion spreading. And that's what we're seeing right now. And it's likely that this is going to go on for at least the next 3 to 6, so possibly even 12 months. We'll see more and more companies struggling because they're not getting back that capital that they thought they were going to. That means that they're then unable to pay their obligations. And so it goes on. So FTX isn't the only company that's failed over the last 6 months. And it certainly won't be the last. BlockFi is the company this week that's gone into bankruptcy, but I am sure there will be more over the course of the next few months. And as I mentioned in a recent video, the problem that we've got here is that the money that all of these companies have raised over the course of the last couple of years is real world money. So the $1 billion that BlockFi raised coming from all of these funds was real cash. That was real money that's been used in that business. That's gone forever. That's lost. And when you look at all the different companies and the billions of dollars that have been raised, FTX raised $1.8 billion, Celsius raised almost $1 billion, and the list goes on. So this is real world money that's disappeared forever. So that's gone from the global economy. And those losses will have their own domino effect because the people who invested in those funds won't get repaid. That means that their net worth will go down, and that means that they'll feel more cautious and are likely to spend less. So this is all going to add to the global slowdown that we're seeing right now. And the other thing that's going to add to it is that these cryptocurrency businesses were employing lots of people. So it's mentioned earlier that BlockFi announced that they're laying off 2/3 of their staff. Well, that's happening across the board right now for all the crypto businesses. So there's lots of people who were coming out of university, going straight into these digital enterprises. It was all going fantastically well. They're now starting to become unemployed. There's less activity in terms of fundraising and acquisitions and growth and development. So the industry itself is starting to contract. So therefore, we've got another sector in the global economy that we're seeing a slowdown and a contraction. And that will obviously add further problems to the global slowdown. So as I said, BlockFi is the latest casualty, but I can guarantee it certainly won't be the last in the world of crypto. I'll keep you posted on any further news and developments as and when they occur. If you've liked what I've said today, please give me a thumbs up. And thank you very much for watching this video all the way through to the end.